welcome back to another episode of Always Another Game. Before I dig into our fantastic guest, I would love to remind everybody that there isn't a cost to listening to this podcast. Absolutely no cost, but there is a fee. If you take anything away from this chat today or any of the other episodes, please do share, like, subscribe, because this word needs to spread as far as we can get it. And if this can just help one person today, that is a huge win. But today I have a former volleyball player, not only just a volleyball player, Premier League volleyball player. I have with me Laura Robson. Laura, how's it going?
Hello, good, thank you. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for coming on. I think it's fascinating. I've through the first few episodes, I've just come up with a completely different array of sports, which actually I wasn't expecting. I was, you know, I haven't had football yet, rugby, cricket. It's been all very kind of unique and maybe smaller based sport, which is what I love. So yeah, thank you for coming sharing your story. We are going to take this in a very unique way today. It's not quite like what the other episodes have come. We are going to have a lot more maybe of a networking vibe and a parenting vibe as well as we move forward. But Laura, what I love for the audience to know right at the beginning of the podcast is, who is Laura Robson?
Oh, who is Laura Robson? What a question. loads of things, I think, and it's definitely changed as I've gone through my life. As you said, volleyball player, sports fan, mother, wife, lover of the great outdoors, and massive tech nerd is the biggest thing, which okay. is where my business has come from, I think.
Yeah,
just a big happy geek, really.
Nice. And what is that business that you do now?
So I own a business called Back Pocket Office. It started out as a virtual assistant business, and it's morphed into us specializing in helping other small businesses streamline their processes. So we do systems implementation, and we have a lovely team of virtual assistants too.
Yeah. I love where it takes it, because virtual assistants is massive now. And for anybody that doesn't know or is unsure, there are many different variations of virtual assistants. But what I love is when you take on something, how it can go into more of your passion. So you start in one place in business, but it doesn't have to stay there. You know, I was a personal trainer for many years, and I felt like I reached a capacity, and actually there is many different ways you can take coaching now as well. So it's fascinating that you kind of had a little passion there and something you really enjoyed, which maybe not many do. So you're very, very helpful. And you were able to implement that into business, which was great. But if we bring back into the sporting element really quickly, now you were very sporty growing up. So what got you into volleyball? Because that isn't, as far as I know, a massive sport over here.
No, it's not. It is quite a niche sport. And back then, 20, 25 years ago, even more so. But I was one of those kids that just did everything. My husband always thinks it's hilarious when we watch the Olympics and I can sit on the sofa and say, I did that. I threw a discus and a javelin and I did long jump and I did this. And yeah, that's how it started, really. I did all sorts of things. When I started secondary school, there was a volleyball club at the school that I went to. My PE teacher was the guy that ran that out of hours for the town that I grew up in. And yeah, it started there. Lots of my friends played, so it was a really social thing. I think the sports that I'd done before that, I'd always done on my own, and this was the first time that I'd done things with friends as well, which made a massive difference. And yeah, it became the thing that stuck, which was great.
Yeah, it's such a social thing, isn't it, sport? And especially if your friends are doing it, you've got that, I guess peer pressure is sometimes a bad word, but actually in this sense, it was good. But I've never seen it in school. Maybe university, you do get a little bit level up. Was the PE teacher into volleyball? Do you know kind of where that actually started?
Yeah, I mean, he'd played for a long time, I think, and for a long time after I left school, he ran that club as well. And okay. you definitely saw it get bigger and bigger. I don't know whether it was a Northeast thing. There were quite a lot of clubs locally to where I grew up. Okay. Now you'll see it in a lot of schools. My eldest son's at secondary school and he's been playing this term.
Okay.
So it's a lot more common than it ever was.
Yeah, because it's different variations, isn't there? So, you know, you've got your big kind of team indoor style volleyball, and then you do have your one-on-ones, your two-on-twos, beach style that you see in the Olympics as well. What was your category? Was there a certain name for it?
It was indoors, really. I have played beach volleyball, the hardest thing ever. And my old teammates that watch this will laugh because I always struggled on the sand. It was indoors for me, six aside.
Yeah. Is there any video evidence of you playing on the sand?
Absolutely not. I might be able to dig out a couple of photos, but there's certainly not videos of me dragging my feet.
Yeah. And, you know, if anybody has run on sand before, you can understand how difficult it is. But it is good fun as well, because I'm sure many people have played it, you know, just messing about on holiday. What was it about volleyball? What was so different about it that it kind of caught your heart?
I think I just found something that I was naturally good at. And I'd enjoyed other sports before and kind of, as I said, done all sorts of things. But it was the camaraderie. It was being part of a team rather than doing something on my own. Socially, that you spend so much time with that team of people. They become such a tight-knit group of friends that the love was almost for that over the sport to some extent. Okay.
Yeah, I get that. You found most people when the ice hockey, they loved the changing room. It was the banter and the music and the fun. And some of the most successful teams I played on had the best changing room. So I get that. I do get that element of falling into the social side of sport. And that's a really good way to look at it, because a lot of people, you know, get pushed into sport because they had a talent for it. And they maybe don't enjoy it. They might have a talent, but they don't enjoy it. Whereas there is other aspects of sport. There isn't. It doesn't just have to be that you have to be making millions. There are so many different elements that you can embrace and enjoy from sport, whether you're, in your childhood years or whether you're as an adult. I spoke about it briefly. My dad's just started playing pickleball. And that's a little bit for exercise and also for social element as well. So I think that's huge. Now, you played Premier League, which is obviously, as many know, doesn't matter what sport it in, that's the highest level, right? So where did the Premier League volleyball take you in the world or traveling the country? Where did it take you?
Took me down south a lot.
Oh, really?
certainly back when I started playing. So it was more my university years that I played at that kind of level. And I played for a team in Leeds, which was amazing. But back then, as you say, it wasn't a huge sport. There weren't a lot of teams. And as you got higher up the leagues and higher kind of to the higher levels, it was all London-based teams, really. So, Okay. Yeah, we spent a lot of time down on that south coast, but I played for a team in Leeds. We were very fortunate back then, actually, that the England team were based in Sheffield. So we had some girls that played for the England team as part of our squad, and there was a bit of a northern hub. Didn't ever go further afield at that kind of level. I played beach volleyball in Spain with one of my teams before, which was good fun. But no, UK-based primarily.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's interesting, because obviously you said it's a predominantly, you know, it felt like it was more of a northern, you know, sport, but yet you were down here so much. But then you brought back the hub. Sheffield is, it just seems like it's the hub of sport, doesn't it, really? Like ice hockey is, it's the hub. They've got the three ice pads there, two ice rinks, three ice pads. Then you have the, what's the place across the road? I completely forgot the name of it, but it has the big athletic center across the road from the ice rink as well, where all the top athletes go. That name's going to bug me now for the rest of this podcast, but it'll come back to me.
Is that where the swimming pool is as well, Ponds Forge?
No, there's no swimming pool there. It's the indoor track. It's the indoor track and gym. Yeah, it's going to bug me. It'll come back to me, and maybe I'll put it in the comment later down the line. But because obviously, even though you play Premier League, would you say you had like a full-time schedule into achieving that level, or did you still remain it kind of like as a part-time?
No, it was very much part-time, and actually partly through that stage of my life, the England team lost funding in the UK and a lot of them moved overseas. So the nature of the sport is that it's part-time, people are studying full-time, working full-time always at the same time. So it was a juggle. It was kind of a couple of training sessions a week on an evening, And then because our matches were on the South Coast and we were traveling so far, it was all weekend, nearly every weekend through those years. Mm-hmm. So it's a big commitment for sure when you're juggling studies and working full time as well.
And that's what I think a lot of people maybe are unaware of, that I guess to start off with, you did uni and play. Did you also work and play?
Yeah, absolutely. Straight from uni into a full-time job. And there were the years that I was playing at the highest level through that transition.
Yeah. And again, that difficulty to work all day, go to training, wake up, go back to work. Work finishes on a Friday. Now I've got to prepare for my events at the weekend. For me, it was very over-consuming. How do you feel you managed that? You know, because it does become a full-time schedule, even though you're in a sense part-time, it's not, because your life is full-time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, it's a difficulty, and people do it because they love it. You have to love it, or you couldn't mm-hmm. possibly make that kind of commitment when it works like that. And then in the end, that ends up being the downfall as well. That ends up being the reason that people step down and that they move away from the sport, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a lot of, you know, time, money. And I said, as soon as you lose the love, which is one of the reasons I actually retired, I did start losing not the love for ice hockey, but the love for what came with it, the travel, the commitment, and everything on that side. I lost a lot of love for the competitive element. And I think without that, it becomes very difficult. And, you know, we're going to get into kind of the parenting element shortly. But, you know, if your kid or if you are playing and the passion isn't there, it's okay. It's very normal. I struggled. You know, I see all the younger players laughing and having fun, and I'm just like, I just want to be at home. It is difficult when you've lost that passion for something you've played so long. Did you feel it helped that you had work alongside the volleyball for when you stepped away? Do you feel that was an easy transition retiring for you?
I think what made it easy to step down was that it was my decision. And I always imagine that it must be really difficult if people have retired through injury or because they've got to a point where they're not good enough and there are younger players coming through. It helped still having work and not kind of leaving that kind of world and having nothing, for sure. But it helped most, I think, that was my decision. I stepped down from playing at that kind of level as soon as I had children. I knew that amount of travel just wasn't conducive with all the traveling and all the commitment. I still played. I didn't retire altogether, but I stepped down into a more local team and I played locally for a few years.
Okay. Have you completely finished now?
Yeah, I've stopped playing in 2018, so it's been a few years now.
Do you miss it?
No, you know, I don't. And I always thought that I would. But as you say, life's so busy and there's so much other stuff. I don't feel like I've had time to miss it. And now I look back on those years where I was juggling family and job and sport, and I wonder how I ever did it.
Yeah, exactly. I feel exactly the same. I sit on the couch at like half six on the weekend, absolutely knackered from being out with the family all day or tough weeks of running my business. I'm like, how was I on the ice right now, ready to start a game where people want to hurt me every single but when I played, I wondered how other people lived their life. Like, well, what did people do on the weekend if you're not playing games? It's such a strange transition, but it sounds like yours was quite fluid, which was really handy. And I suppose with the family and the job, it gave you a nice transition, which is huge. So you didn't go straight into what you're doing now. What were you doing?
I was a mad scientist in the NHS for a long time. So I worked in pathology in the NHS for 13 years. And then I worked in IT project delivery for a little bit as well, just after I left the sport, actually. I changed lots of things at the same time. I left the sport. I started a new job. It was only 2022 that I started out in business.
Yeah. So was there a revelation then? If you changed so much at one time, was it just the right timing, or was there some big kind of wow moment you had?
No, I don't think there was. I think a lot of it was family based, as my children got older and they needed more from me. maybe I noticed what a big difference it was stepping away from the sport and giving them that little bit of time. But the nature of the job that I had in healthcare was all consuming as well. So I think I was probably still searching for that balance a little bit and the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, LinkedIn, where we've actually met, has taught me an awful lot of not just things about business, but myself. And one of the massive things it's taught me is networking. And it's allowed me to create this podcast with fantastic people, because most people has come from LinkedIn. But in 2022, you started your business. Now, tell us a little bit more about your first client in business and where they came from.
Yeah, my first client is a lady called Amy Jeffs, who runs a PR and marketing company. And we met when we were 12 in the North of England Juniors training camp a long, long time ago. So, yeah, very old volleyball friend. Our paths crossed many times through sport. And when I set up my business and I joined LinkedIn and started marketing and promoting what I was doing, Amy reached out to me and we caught up and we had a coffee, and she ended up being my first client, which was amazing.
It's that power, isn't it, of those even if a sport is small, there is so much tight-knit community within that. You see it a lot, like especially in the ice hockey, that if anything major happens, they all jump in. Everybody kind of, all the teams go out the window and everybody comes together and combines. And that's what I love about niche sports, smaller sports, is that, you know, everybody does know everybody, and everybody is willing to help you and support. And I think what you found there is the power of your network, to not forget that when you play sport, those people that you've grown up with or have come across can have a really big factor on what you do later in life. Have you come across any other scenarios where the volleyball and the business has crossed over like that?
A little bit. So there are people that I've played with in the past who are LinkedIn specialists who exist in that business network. And although I haven't worked with any of them, they're always the first people to be on your team. You know, if you have got posts out there that you want sharing, or the first people to give you a cheer if you're recognizing some success or a win you've had. And yeah, that community never kind of leaves you, that team spirit, even when you're not part of the team anymore. And that's the real power of it.
Yeah. What do you think the reason is that the athlete behaves like that? That they are, even after they've retired, they still are rooting for you. They still want to see you win. What do you think it makes difference from, you know, an athlete friend to maybe a family member?
I think a lot of it has to come down to trust. And I think generally networking's like that anyway. You know, people do business with people. The vast majority of my business has come to me locally, not online, despite having a virtual business. And there's nothing like kind of that team environment to really build trust and really know people. And they do become like more than family. I mean, you can have family members that don't root for you in the way that a teammate would. It's a very unique relationship.
Yeah, because I've had a lot more individual sporting athletes on so far, and not a huge amount of team ones. And obviously I come from a team background, so it's kind of like it's different in a way that you have to know that they've got your back, that if you're not at your best or you need an arm around you or a kick up the backside, you need to know that you're all moving towards the same goal, which, again, in business, sometimes you are by yourself and other times you have a team, or, you know, you have a network around you. And there's nothing quite like that changing room vibe to push you on. So with your first client, what do you think it was just purely that you knew each other, or what do you think it was maybe that from your volleyball days that stood out to her that went, yeah, actually, no, Laura's the person I need to work with?
I think it absolutely has to be back to those days, because we've never worked together. We don't know each other professionally. It had been a few years actually until we connected again. But you understand each other's work ethic when you've been in that kind of environment, and that's a big thing. Because we know each other well and we've got that kind of relationship, she's able to trust me at my word. Kind of a stranger on the other side of LinkedIn can read any of these posts that I'm writing about what I'm good at and what I do and how I can help. But to a lot of people, they're just words, and they've got no idea whether I'm just making that up or not. Whereas,
yeah,
we've got that trust. She knows I've got that work ethic. We've known each other a long time, so she can look at what I'm saying to her and believe that I can do all these things that I'm saying that I can do for her and her business. And yeah, it was a really strong relationship, despite having that big gap between playing together and working together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that no like trust, and when you're on the court with somebody, it's different. It's different than being in an office and sitting next to somebody. You know, you are family. People say your sporting team is your family, and it is. You spend so much time together, sometimes even more than parts of your family. You know, you do build bonds that last a long time. I still kind of occasionally, maybe once a year, I go and watch my old team play. It's like you'd never been away. And you know, and that's still four or so years since I retired. You know, 4 years is a long time, but yeah, it still feels like home. And I think that's the fascinating part of sport, is that legacy can carry on, which I know you're trying to do as well, because I believe you're passing the athletic sporting torch on to some little people in your household.
I am. I'm living vicariously through my two boys now that I don't play myself. My eldest son especially has got some amazing running ability, a brilliant swimmer. So yeah, I'm hoping that he kind of really follows his passion and doesn't lose that love for what he's doing. He's only 12 now, so he's got a long road ahead of him. But yeah, my life's all sitting on swimming pool balconies or freezing out in the cold while he's running cross country at the moment.
Yeah. So how did he find out, or how did you find out for him that was something he was talented in?
The running is something that we've always done. My dad was an incredible runner, actually. He didn't start running until he was 40, and he was knocking out 17 and a half minute 5Ks by the time he was 50. So, yeah, I think he's definitely got some natural ability there, and we're into park run as a family, and we do lots of active stuff. I'm terrible at saying no if they want to try new things, because that's how I found my thing. Yeah. So they've done all sorts of stuff over the last few years until they found what really suited them. The swimming he really loves. I think it's insane that he can spend 2 hours just going up and down and up and down. And he loves it. He's so passionate about it. So yeah, it's just really amazing to see. And it's a reminder of kind of how you felt about your sport back in those peak times when you were playing a lot and doing something you really loved.
Yeah, I think it's very important as a parent, as I'm trying to find out, and my parents did it for me, is to let them explore. And it is difficult with financial strains and the cost that sport can come with. But one thing that we did that's at my eldest school is there is a multi-sports class. And we thought, well, that's a great idea, because then he can try these things and see if he likes anything. And then it'd be like, okay, well, yeah, you like this, so would you like to then go and try more? Because I have no idea what we'll be good at. You know, yes, the passion part is great, but sometimes there is an extra element to their build or legacy again. You know, what the family's done in the past, there's obviously potentially a reason genetically why some people are good at sport as well. So I think that trying element's really important. I'm just going to rewind though back to this 40-year-old starting runner. Now, my face initially was like, wow, they started at 40. Gosh, isn't that late? But then you said by 50, right, that they were doing the time. Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, that's 10 years. That's a long time. It's never too late. I always say there's only one day that it's too late if you've got a passion for something, and that's obviously your last ever day, and hopefully that's a long way off for many people. But it shows you that you can do something later on. So looking at that and your volleyball, do you see any time that you might actually go back and participate a little bit?
I don't know. You know, like, we go on holiday with the kids sometimes, and they've always got a court, haven't they? And people coming round trying to rustle up some business, I suppose, for a quick game. And I'm always tempted, and I'll have a knockabout. I don't think I'll ever go back to playing properly. I think I'm past that now and I've got other things that I enjoy. So yeah, I'd replace it with something else, but I don't think I would ever commit to something at that level now. I almost forgot until I mentioned my dad that when we talked about how it all started, like he's how it all started really. I don't think I did a lot until my dad took up running. He was 40 and I was 8 and I joined the running club with him at the same time. And that's how it started really. Yeah, you're right, it's never too late. And I think we're eager to, especially with children, we're eager to help them find their thing really early and we want them to succeed, especially if we're competitive as parents, as many of us are, if we've been in that world. But I didn't find my thing until I was 12. You know, I think sometimes the primary school age and you try to find them something that they love, they don't need to find what they love yet. They start secondary school and that's kind of a bit like a multi-sports arena as well. They try so many different things and they can find the thing they love. It took me till I was 12 to find what I loved and what I was good at. It took my dad until he was 40 and he was an amazing athlete. It's never too late. And it's never too late to change your mind and start something new either, I don't think.
That's huge. That's absolutely huge because I started playing ice hockey at 5. I played other sports, but I played at 5. And when I had my two boys, I was kind of like, right, he's 5. Why is he not doing, you know, why is he not focusing on anything that he loves? But then you hear stories like yours and, you know, one of my good friends from ice hockey as well, he came onto the scene from roller and he came straight into the England setup. And he was fantastic and he had a long career just the same as mine. And that was about 13, 14. So, you know, it doesn't need to be forced. I think the key is to get the key skills, right? You know, you run in and swim for safety and, you know, just let kids be kids and let them find their feet. But at the same time, building up, you know, the sporting environment, the athleticism, and let them try other things. So I think that's really important to know that it's okay. It is okay. I had to remind myself.
I think it's the activity that's important when they're small. Like you need to kind of just try and instill that love of being active and doing things that are good for them and finding things that they enjoy and being outdoors and kind of, you know, my kids spend plenty of time glued to a screen. That's the world that we live in now, but they've found what they love as well. And they love being outside and they love being active. And that's what's important when they're little. They'll find their thing when they're ready to find it.
Yeah. And it is, it's trusting that they'll find it because without that passion and purpose that a lot of people have spoken about within their sports on this show, they're only going to build up resentment anyway, if it's forced upon them. You know, I've seen some very talented athletes not make it anywhere because it was forced because, you know, the parents put it upon them. The kids didn't actually really want to do it. And I think that is a big part of success is actually they actually do want to do it. Yes, there has to be that gentle nudge. Okay. Have you had to use the gentle nudge? How do you kind of manage, or are they kind of pretty much at the moment like, yeah, we're going and we're going to have fun?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, the challenge is certainly for him is balancing school with sport, and the nudge is more with, you know, we're not going to make it to training if you are refusing to do the stuff that you need to do for school. And that's the challenge.
I remember those.
At the moment, he swims on an evening. It's got potential to move to 5:30 in the morning. So I expect he might need a little bit more of a nudge then.
Okay.
it always has to be his decision, absolutely. And as a parent, I think the important thing actually is recognising when it's I can't be bothered today compared to actually I really don't want to do this anymore. So I think it's important to keep nudging for a little while so that they don't make a decision to leave a sport that they end up regretting, but being able to recognise actually that if they decide that that's not for them, then that's okay. Because you're right, they'll get to adulthood when I'm not there to nudge and push and do all of those things. And then they need to have that want in themselves to carry on, or they'll stop at that point anyway.
Yeah. And as we know from the podcast and your own journey, if the sport never really went anywhere, there's still life after the game. You can, you know, the skills that you have learned from the hours that they have already done has been a learning process. You are now a business owner. So you can also inspire them to to start their own business if they wanted to without having to go into a 9-to-5. So in all these early phases of parenting, you know, a child athlete, it's teaching them more than just scoring a goal or hitting a spike or, you know, doing a knockout. There is so much more to it, and let them embrace that social element, the skill element, the discipline, the consistency. Let them kind of embrace that. Now, this potential move to half five, have you got a plan in mind to, you know, to kind of on the nudging side rather than forcing? Have you thought about that yet?
I think I'm very fortunate that he is a morning person and he's generally up by six, half six anyway. So yeah, we're hoping it'll be a smooth transition and he'll deal well with it. But it's just keeping an eye on tiredness and making sure we keep the balance so that he continues to be successful in other areas of his life and it's not just hyper focused on the sport. I think that's the thing.
Yeah, is that a priority to you as well to ensure that he does do just as well in his academics as he does in the sporting career?
Yeah, I think when you're a competitive person, I don't think that is restricted to sport. I think you just want to be the best that you can be at everything you do. And that's what makes people in sport good in business as well, because mm-hmm. it doesn't matter where your focus is. You just want to be the best that you can be. So, yeah, I absolutely want the best for him in his kind of school life as well, whether or not he's academic. But it's the same kind of thing, you know, finding the subjects that he loves and the things that he wants to do. If he ends up in a sport that isn't full time and he needs to balance that with working life as well. We all know what it's like to be in a job that you don't enjoy doing or that sucks the energy out of you. Your kind of motivation in all areas of your life impacts the motivation that you've got for your sport. Even at mm-hmm. 12, if he's had a rough day at school, that sucks the motivation out of him to go to training then. And it kind of, that balance is so important. So yeah, I want him to find the subjects that he enjoys doing and give everything his best, not just his extracurricular stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's kind of thriving in all areas. You know, if you kind of really focus down too much on one, it can restrict you as well. You know, I was always kind of guided as well, and I didn't want to go to uni, but I still stayed on at sixth form because I felt like it was the right thing to do. And the parents said, you know, you should do your education, but they never forced the uni upon me because, you know, I was 16 going, you know, playing professional ice hockey. So that was kind of the route I wanted to start off. But same as you, I had the part-time jobs as well. And it's difficult to find the balance. And I think one of the key jobs as a parent is to assist that, not to force that, but to assist that. And you mentioned there earlier about, if you know, got to do your work and do well at school, otherwise, you know, we can't go to training. Is there anything else you've implemented or any other advice you could kind of give to any parents listening that can help their kids and help them to help their kids?
The biggest thing for us has been mindset, and talking about mindset a lot and just being really open about mental health and that kind of thing has been really important, because I think when a child becomes competitive really young, especially with themselves, it can really impact the way that they're feeling across everything. He can be so tough on himself already. And yeah, that's our big thing. So we are very careful about keeping the right balance, making sure that he has rest time from his training if he needs it. Planning is huge in terms of understanding where in the week he can fit things like homework in, because especially with swimming, I mean, he swims four nights a week. So trying to balance everything alongside that is difficult. So yeah, planning and balance, making sure he's well fed and making sure that his mental health's good and he's happy to speak to us and be open about that if he needs anything and he's got any worries or he's stressing himself out or he thinks he's not good enough, whatever it might be.
Yeah. How do you encourage that open communication?
Do you know, he speaks on the way to training. That is his safe space. And it's really interesting that if you try and pin him down anywhere else or any other time, it can be really difficult to get into him. But yeah, that's his safe space on the way to training. He just, you're not face to face, you're sat side by side. And I think that really helps sometimes when you try to get deep with a 12-year-old. And yeah, that's where he opens up and he'll have a chat about how he's feeling about school or about training and what's going on in his life. So it's just creating that space, I think, especially if you've got a bigger family and more than one child, where they've got some one-on-one time to open up and yeah, chat about it.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because as a coach, I've had some walk and talks. And, you know, obviously when you're walking, you don't walk like that. For anybody who's listening, I was looking to my side, but you walk, you know, looking straight forward most of the time. And it's interesting actually how you can listen as well without being directly looking, and how more open somebody can be without having to look you in the eye and tell you. So it's really interesting that you found that space for him. And then, you know, anybody that's listening, you know, have a look, take note of when they are a bit more chatty. I think I used to do a lot of mine in the car, actually. You know, thinking about it, I always used to ask, you know, my dad, oh, how did I play? And, you know, and I think you got a lot more out. It's quite actually an interesting thing there. You've got your little bubble, your little safe space in the car, haven't you? So
you do. And I mean, all children love to have a chat when they're supposed to be going to bed as well, don't they? So that's a great time.
yeah not for us as adults, but yeah, for them it's great. And I love what you said about planning as well, because there's that saying, isn't there, it's fail to prepare to fail. And what many don't know is actually planning directly links to you being happy, and unplanning is directly leading to risk of being unhappy. If you look at it like driving to Scotland, you've got to plan your route. You've got to check Google Maps, make sure there's no road shut. You've got to have your snacks and your drink, and you've got to have your fuel in the car. If you literally just woke up and said, right, going to Scotland, and you know, you just jumped in the car, you could be stuck for 3 hours in a road that was closed with no snacks, everyone needing the loo. Oh, we're out of petrol because we didn't fill up. It makes sense to plan. Is there anything that you have skill-wise that you kind of use to help that?
It's something we're thinking about more at the moment. So I obviously use loads of things like task management type systems and that kind of things, like tech stuff in my business. It's trying to think of things that suit a 12-year-old in terms of writing things down so that he remembers, and just having a bit of structure. So, I mean, we've got training sessions written on calendars and that kind of thing. And I think I agree that planning is just key to everything. It just gets rid of the overwhelm of, oh, I'm doing all of these things. When am I going to fit this in? Mum's nagging me. I've got this homework, but I've got training here, 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 and here. Just having it written down somewhere and a bit of a plan just takes that overwhelm away from kids and adults, all of us.
Yeah, just a simple family calendar we have. I know my two are a lot younger and not at that level, but just having it laid out, everybody knows. Everybody knows where you can go to look and see what everybody's doing. I think the biggest part is remembering to actually put stuff on it. That's a big part. But you're right, planning, you know, because planning will reduce a lot of stress and overwhelm for you as well, let alone the athlete. Because as a parent, having to do all the traveling and making sure that the, you know, the meals and stuff, it can be very overwhelming. So, you know, doing something like that and sitting down whenever it might be, start of the week, end of the week, and mapping it out is really, really powerful. Now, Laura, I haven't asked this question to many of my athletes, but because we're on a parenting style subject, if you could go back, knowing what you know now as a parent and what you're utilizing, if you could go back and talk to little Laura and give her one piece of advice around sport or life, you know, the same that maybe you share now with your kids, but what would you say to little Laura?
I think the main thing for me would be that reminder that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And that if you, as you say, fall out of love with your sport, and when you get to the end of that, to find something else that you love. When I was really little, I tried loads of things and I found my thing. And I think what's important is that we can do that as adults as well. You know, I got to the end of my volleyball career and that stopped. And it was difficult finding something to replace that with. And for a long time, I didn't replace it with anything. What I should have done was gone back to little Laura then and tried all of the things again and found something new that I enjoyed. And now I enjoy going out for a run and I enjoy getting in a cold pond. I'm a huge fan of cold water swimming, and that's my new thing. But it took me a long time to remember that actually I can just go and try a whole load of new things again now and find my new thing. So, I'm not sure I would tell little Laura anything, because I feel like we did what really worked for me back then. I tried all of the stuff. I found the thing that stuck, and I enjoyed a great career in that into adulthood. I forgot about that when I got to that point where I needed to find something new. So I think it's kind of like 30-year-old Laura that I needed to have a chat with.
Yeah, and that's perfect, because that is the exact reason we're doing the podcast, is to remind everybody the power that sport has. If we remember what we did and how we did it, we can still use it today. We can still use it in our life, in our business, in our parenting. There are skills to be learnt there. So yeah, that's a fantastic way to round up the episode. Laura, if anybody wants to talk to you about volleyball or talk to you about streamlining their business, where can they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn under my name, and my website is backpocketoffice.co.uk, where you'll find all my links.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing your story today. It's been absolutely fascinating. I've really enjoyed catching up. And before anybody leaves, again, don't forget the fee. If you've taken anything away from Laura today, or you feel that it could help somebody else that might be struggling in the same sort of scenario, please share the episode. Let them have a little listen. And thank you once again for all your support on the podcast so far. We have many more fantastic episodes to come. So, Laura, thank you so much for coming in. And I hope everybody has a great day. We'll catch you on the next episode. And remember, there is always another game.